You're listening to Mainstream Metaphysics with Nick and Audrey Newmont, only on LA Talk Radio.
Good evening. It's 7 o'clock. It's Tuesday night. Welcome to Mainstream Metaphysics.
All right.
We have our live audience back, and I do mean live. This is a live crowd. They're like rowdy and boisterous before the show started. I like an audience like that. Thank you for coming. This is a really big show for us. I sound like Ed Sullivan. I'm sorry. Right here on our show. It's Audrey's birthday, and that's why it's such a big deal tonight. So, and again, thanks for coming. Audrey is 29 years old.
I'm actually 58. I don't mind saying it. I worked hard to get here.
That's funny. So again, thanks for watching Mainstream Metaphysics. We are live streaming audio on LA Talk Radio site. And we, of course, if you're watching, we're on my Facebook page, Audrey's Facebook page, or LA Talk Radio's Facebook page. And unfortunately, our guest this evening had some things go on that she wasn't able to make it. We will get her rescheduled. So Audrey, being her birthday, chose a very, very juicy, very salty topic. And she said, why not? Why don't we talk about sex? All right. So if we're talking about it, I guess that's oral sex.
It's one of the things we're talking about tonight. Oh, Nicholas. Yeah, he went there.
I did. Okay. Anything to make Audrey laugh. Look, why did you want to talk about this?
That's just one of the things that I wanted to talk about. We're going to talk a little bit about timelines. I thought it's my birthday and I've had a 58-year timeline, and I was thinking about my life and looking over my timeline. And I'm going to talk about a few things when we get a little bit more into it. But Nick and I were talking the other day about everybody's timeline. He has a class that he's teaching right now. And last week in the class, he was talking about the different levels of growth that we go through in our own timelines, everybody's timeline.
In fact, when we talk about this, it sounds kind of juicy, but we're really talking about sexuality development and the experiences that we go through that mold our behavior and our comfort or discomfort in being able to relate to people socially and intimately. And it's a very dicey part of our development. Mm-hmm. And that happens, between ages 9 and 15, our ability to relate to people, whether friend, lover, coworker, boss, occurs, we're trained by the father and his behavior between 9 and 15. And it really gets down to, if your father is very warm and fuzzy and shows affection to you, or shows affection to the mother in front of the kids while the kids are age 9 to 15, then the kids grow up very comfortable and relationship becomes more of a priority. Mm-hmm. But if the father is somewhat strict and stoic and is not real close to the family, and he's more of an intellectual analyzing type, then the children grow up very cautious and reserved in their relationship to people. And relationship is actually less of a priority if they're raised in an environment like that. And further, if there is no father in the picture, there's no main male caregiver, then the kids automatically grow up with that cautious and reserved behavior toward relationship, because that's what they automatically go to, because they don't have a role model to show them any different. Mm-hmm. And then you're dealing with abandonment and rejection and all of those good things.
Mm-hmm. So are we going into this topic now, or we're going to talk about those things first? Because I see you always get excited when Nick has these things happening over here.
It takes so little.
Because he's sharing some good information. So let's just share that, and then we'll get a little bit more into what we were talking about, because that's a deeper subject.
Well, first of all, I love when my viewers on Facebook and Instagram, when I write and post information, the responses that I get about astrology. And so this evening at 6:05 p.m. Pacific time, Mercury went retrograde. And that just sounds like a great big foghorn out there on the post. It's like the Addams Family doorbell with Lurch answering it. Look, it's Mercury is retrograde in the sign of Scorpio, which means that with Mars retrograde at the same time, we have to be very careful of very passive aggressive, instigated, agitated kind of communication, and also bringing up things from the past that were not communicated. Or, you know what, and I just want to tell you, I'm really upset because, you know, back when you did such and such. That is the kind of thing that we will see over the next 3 weeks. And keep in mind, while Mars continues to retrograde, the day of the election, Mercury turns direct the morning of the election. And so during this period of Mercury retrograde, voters will be looking at, well, I think I'm going to vote this way. And then the day of the election, especially if people voted by mail or voted early, something will happen that morning and people are going to be either changing their mind or saying, oh, I wish I had voted the other way. I guarantee you this is what's going to happen. And there will be a lot of personal upset with it. And a lot of people are not going to be happy. I'm not saying there's going to be rioting in the streets, but there's going to be a lot of unhappy people based on what's going on here with the planets.
And so from here to there, while we're in Mercury retrograde, what should they be doing?
Lay low. And I mean that, it sounds like I'm joking, but if you feel aggression and you want to be assertive, think about it first. Think before you speak in this Mercury retrograde. Otherwise, what's going to come out of your mouth is going to look like ready, fire, aim. And it's too late at that point. Once it's said, you can't unsay it, and people can't unhear what's been said. So just lay low, all yep. right? Now, on a little better note, that sounds so foreboding, I know.
Lay low.
Remember, no astrological paranoia. I always say that. Use common sense. Do what you need to do. This coming Friday, the 16th, we have a new moon in Libra, which will put a lot of focus on cooperation and relatability. So it's a very positive new moon, and it's a new view on relationships and how to behave in relationships and the we concept, which is very Libra.
Mm-hmm.
So I like that. And when you have a new moon, you create new habits. You think about what habits haven't been serving you, and you change your behavior on the new moon. And because it takes 21 days to start a new habit. So when the moon aligns with the sun, which is a new moon, that's the point where you start saying, I'm going to do this from now on. Okay? All right. Oh, talk about your jewelry.
We have Lauren Grant's beautiful pieces here. We love her so much. And he's got something in his pocket. I hear him. Are you going to give me one of her pieces?
Yes.
You're going to give me that one that I love so much.
Happy birthday.
Oh, my gosh. Remember I was saying I wanted this? Thank you, Lauren Grant. This is gorgeous. And this piece comes off. You can wear it on other things. Oh, thank you so much.
You're welcome. Now, what you don't know. What? Your birthday's.
Yeah, actually, your birthday's tomorrow. Don't even, it's tomorrow. It's next week.
So.
How nice.
Now, that leads to this.
What?
So on Tuesday, November 10th, Lauren Grant, the maker of the jewelry, will be on this show.
Yay. Oh, my goodness. I'm so excited about that. Yeah, I've been talking about her every single week.
Her stuff is incredible.
She should be
on this
show.
And I'm a guy saying that. I mean, it's like, jewelry is beautiful.
Oh, goody. That'll be fun. Thank you so much.
You are welcome.
That's gorgeous.
That's the least I could do for you.
And these are the ones I'm wearing tonight. I don't know if you can see. They're so pretty. I'm going to take them too. Anyway, happy birthday. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
So what are we talking about now?
I think now, on that note, we'll just jump into the sexuality behavior.
All right. So with regard to the sexuality behavior, one of the things that I wanted to talk about tonight, and we're going to get to that part, is our timeline. So today I'm 58, so I've been on the planet for all these years. And as a therapist, I've worked a lot of those years looking at other people's timelines. and in my own life had my own timeline. And I've never, you know, it's so funny. I have my clients do like a full out timeline. And when I was going through the process of all this, I never did my own timeline. I never did the full out thing. So I was thinking about it today and I was looking back over, you know, all the different events, all the stories along the way, all of the things that made me who I am today. And, you know, all the growth that has been there. And to be honest, and for those of you that know me, especially my friends back in Florida, who I used to be when I was back in Florida isn't who I am now. And who I was when I moved out here in, when I was around 23-ish.
Around 1985.
Yeah, I moved out here to work at Vidal Sassoon on Rodeo Drive. And who I was then, and then in the period of, you know, meeting my first husband and having my daughter, there was a whole nother person. And then when my daughter hit around 4 or 5, that literally forced me to grow up and become, in a lot of ways, the person that I am now. So I wanted to talk a little bit more about that part in the timeline where we're from 0 to 8. So in our all of our timelines, when we're in that 0 to 8 program, we're learning the literal program of who we are. We're learning from our parents. We're learning from the influential people around us. And in that period of time in my own life, and this isn't to say anything bad or hard about my mother, but in her own mind, her perception of me was that I was not that bright. I was the dumb one, not very smart. So in who I was at that time, I always was just in my own mind thinking, sometimes I'm kind of cute because she said she's cute, but she's not that smart. So I would be in my mind not thinking that I'm all that bright. So that created an element for me when I was going through my years of childhood where I was going to school and really struggling and making whatever grades, especially with math. And in that part of the 9 to 12, I just had a client the other day, and I think this is something that is not discussed very much, but it is very important. So I like to relate different things that have gone on in my timeline that I've seen in other people's timelines. My client came in, and I'm actually literally going to share her timeline. I got permission. She's anonymous, and I wanted to share certain things. So like her, in my own timeline, there was a period of around 9 years old where I started getting heavier. Now, we didn't know at that time what I know now, and especially having had 3 daughters. When a little girl is going through that period of her time, she's starting to get ready for having her, you know, her cycle. And for a lot of girls at that age, they start getting a little plumper. And unfortunately, at that point in my life, I didn't have the kind of support. I literally had a grandmother, and I found a letter that she wrote to me not too long ago where she was mentioning that, am I on my diet? You know, am I losing weight? And I guess at that time I had said that I wanted to go and learn how to ride a horse. And she said, wouldn't you be so sad for that horse having you on its back? You know, and I'm a 9-year-old kid. So I take on a belief system through that kind of experience about how I am with regard to weight. And my client, she had the same thing happen. And again, it's her family. You know, she was raised here and in another country. And her family was like, oh, but you would be so cute if you would just lose the weight. So there's been a lot of clients that I've worked with along the way. Many, Kirby, you know, sometimes I glance down here and I see the comments and Kirby's like, I like plump. Don't you, Nick?
Kirby. Someone I went to high school with.
And that's one of the things about Nick. He's seen me in all levels of me. Yes, he loves me in all the ways that I am. Mm-hmm, but course. I wanted to mention this because when we're all in that very trying, challenging time of 9 till what is that age?
15.
From 9 to 15, we're all learning how we be. We're all learning how to literally own the parts of our lives. So for a lot of girls, you know, we start understanding who we are physically. And I wanted to bring up back to the sex part, Something that happened or has happened with a few of my male clients, there's that part of it where a boy at that age is learning how to be with himself and learning how to be in sexuality and learning and understanding what that means. And this is one of those things that in conversation with therapy, it's like, there's all these different ways that guys learn how to be intimate, how to make love to a woman. And one of the things that I don't think I've seen discussed very much at all are the guys that go into their father's drawers and they, not their drawers, their drawers, and they, it just sounded funny. They go into their magazines, as it were, and they start finding like the sexy magazines. And so they don't have a girl, they have a magazine, and they start using that as a visual on what is intimate for them. And I've had a few men along the way where they have a challenge with finding a partner because their idea of sexuality has been grown up with what they're seeing on this magazine. So they're always looking for something. Like, for instance, as an example, they'll tell me, well, I can't find anybody. Well, there's plenty of women out there. Yeah, but the ones that I want don't want me. So there is a part of it where they're literally learning, I love something that's unattainable. This is what gives me the pleasure. And then as they move forward in their life, it's really hard for them to attain that, you know, and that's a challenge. So we're learning that whole way how to be, and then nobody ever learns how to relearn it because there's not that part that's talked about, right, Nick?
Right. And the other thing is, and this is for the guys, whether in the room or, you know, in the viewing, you know, at home, you know, guys are more visual. All right. That's where their turn on comes from. Women are more auditory. Women want to hear things. It's not that women aren't interested in seeing a hottie, but the turn on comes from the compliment and what they're told. In fact, a therapist I knew many years ago when would talk about this topic, she would say that women need to have eargasms.
It's true.
Right? They need to hear things.
Funny.
They want to be told things. So keep that in mind. And when we're talking about the early development, and in fact, on our Monday night class, we've really gotten into the depth of the chakra development and how it relates to stages of growth and the etheric stages of growth. And so there is a mystical, ritualistic part of that development. It's not just a physical thing. And I'm talking about the second chakra, the ones at the navel.
Mm-hmm.
And we learn that development from between 3 to 5 years old. That's when our emotional development takes place. So it actually begins in learning to relate to things at that age, and that's the autonomy stage.
Mm-hmm.
So we're developing that area of our life where we're looking for, just call it satisfaction, at a young age.
And then we hear that song, I can't get no da-da-dum, satisfaction.
But you can.
Right? So there's all these different ways
you
that
you can't
we...
always get what you want.
<That's true.
laughs> We're going to go Rolling Stones.
So I wanted to bring up these examples because when I'm working with a client, I'm literally looking at their timeline. And I've heard from many clients over the years that they have challenges with intimacy. They have challenge with sex. They have challenge with having an orgasm. So there's a part of it where I look at their timeline and we go back through it. And it's like, what was your first experience? You know, what are those things that had you be developed into who you are now? So when we are able to see that and we're able to understand, here's what you learned, here's the program that you took on, then when you get to this moment now, and there's a part where you say, I really want intimacy, I really want to have this great relationship, it's a matter of undoing that belief system and owning what the adult you wants, right?
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
So with that being said, I wanted to share a little bit more about my timeline, but I wanted to share kind of what a timeline means. with doing it, because when I'm working with my clients, they come in and first they learn what their mind looks like. They learn what their heart looks like. They learn how feelings create in their body. They learn what conscious and unconscious minds, what that all means. And then by the third or the fourth session they come in, we start getting a little bit deeper into different aspects of their life. So as an example, I have a client that she reached that third session. I said, all right, so your homework this week is I want you to create a timeline. And it's, we give them a big ass piece of paper and I give them direction on how to do it. And then they bring it back and we start discussing this thing. So she starts talking and she's sharing the timeline. And then I start going into taking notes and I'm looking at it and I'm listening to her and we're, you know, we're just, she's telling me the story of her life, because in the stories of all of our lives are who we are, you know, it's who we've learned how to be. So in the story of her life, she tells me at 9 months, she's walking and talking. So it shows me that she's very aware and very involved in her environment. She's very present. She also is telling me that she lived with this huge family and she was like doted on. Everybody just loved her. And then she tells me that at 3 years old, she had to leave and go to a whole nother country. And so I'm looking at that and it's like, all right, so remember, between 0 and 8 years old, that's where we're taking a lot of who we are. So I'm looking at that 3 years old. That's the first like hard moment. It's hard for anyone to leave this whole nest of people that love you and you're going somewhere completely different. So then she moves to this new place and she's got this, on a lot of levels, a really good life. She has a very good relationship with her father. She's got all these things going on. But then at 6 years old, the parents split. And so then for the next little bit, she's going back and forth. She doesn't see her father. So there is another sort of a unique moment of separation in her life. And then she tells me at 9 years old, they move from that country back to here in the United States. And so she goes through all the challenges that she's got then. And mind you, this is 9 years old. She's leaving her father at that point. What did you say about 9 years old and leaving the father?
Yep. And if he's not in the picture, we can have abandonment, rejection issues.
Yeah. So it's no accident that she's coming to me at this point in her life. And it's like, I keep struggling to have a relationship. And there's other things that are going on with her. So we start looking at her life a little bit more. And, you know, her grandfather died, the mother remarried. You know, there's all these things that are happening. So as she's talking to me, I'm like, wait a minute. And I've done this a few times with clients. And I looked at her and I said, wait a minute, something is really interesting here. And then I started to do this. I looked at it and it's like, when you were 3 years old was the first abandonment, and then six, and then nine, and you had all these events. It's like every 3 years, like clockwork. And then I looked at her and I said, well, what happened at 18? And immediately out of her mouth, it was like, well, this happened. And then I'm like, and how about 21? And I didn't tell her the 3 year thing at that point. And she said, well, this happened at 21. And then I was like, 24? This thing, and it's like big things in her life, like those altering moments that are just powerful in our lives. And then 27, 30, same thing. And now here she is at the ripe young age of 33. And we looked at each other and our mouths just fell open. And she could see the whole picture of all the things that just kept going and kept getting, unfortunately, worse and worse as they kept going. So she reached a point where it was just unacceptable anymore. And the really great thing is having this kind of realization and understanding that this isn't like who she is, it's what she learned. And this is one of those things that I tell my clients, and I can't stress enough, it's so important. We all have those challenging moments, and I've had a lot of them in my own life. And to be clear, I have had many, many, many lessons to learn along the way. And that's why I can tell you this, what I'm about to say, with absolute certainty, because not only do I still experience it, but I have clients that I can just see it coming. So I tell them this, here's the thing, here's what your fear is, what those hard moments are. And we all have an opportunity to learn from them. And they come in and they have a session. And let's just imagine that here's the fear itself, our ego, that stuff. And when you're learning and you're growing beyond it, imagine that there's a bungee cord, and that bungee cord, you pull it away and it feels better. And it's like, huh, I feel better. But then we haven't really fixed the problem. So what happens is we slap back to our ego. We slap back to that thing happening. So then we talk about it some more, my client and I, and they get better and it feels better and they're doing better. And it's like, whoo, this feels much better now. But they haven't gotten to the root of it. They haven't finished it, and they slap back. And what happens if we don't finish it, each time it slaps back even harder. And there's somebody in this audience who had that happen recently, and she worked through it. And it was like, and she kept telling me, she goes, it's even worse now. This is harder. And I was like, I know, it's because we have to really get to the root of it and finish it. Well, she cut that bungee cord and it's done. That thing is never going to be in her life again. So there's this part of things where it's almost like the saying of when you have the onion and you're peeling back that first layer and it feels, all right, it's easier and it's easier. Yet you'll know when you get to the nut of it, and you know when you're never going to slap back again. It's when you have no emotion on it whatsoever. And that's a brilliant and wonderful place to be. And then the next thing comes along that you get to work through. But the I call it dumping the trunk. So the more stuff you get out of the trunk, the lighter and lighter you're going to get on with your life, right?
Yep, definitely.
You have anything to add to all of that? Because I'm talking a lot. It must be my birthday.
Well, it's your topic. You know, when on the mystical side of things, when we talk about the energy work, the healing work that I do, the second chakra and what it represents is the one that gets blocked more than any other chakra. Because that chakra energetically represents your self-worth, your self-esteem, abundance, creativity. It represents the sex organs, the ovaries, the testicles, and it is your approach to relationships, intimacy, being physical, mental, emotional. It's guilt, shame, and remorse. Mm-hmm. So we throw that in. Security, insecurity, trust, mistrust. All that, the bulk of our psyche, as it relates to today's modern world, is in the second chakra. And so that's the one that gets blocked more. It's the one that gets thrown off more. Like, for instance, when you have someone, especially a woman, that has been molested or raped, depending on how the pain pleasure area of that, which is the fear of the unknown, on our comfort level with known and unknown, it's not physical pain. When that gets thrown off abruptly, it can cause the personality to be either very promiscuous or very shut down sexually. And it's just up to that individual and what that threshold of pain is for them. And it's not predictable as to which way that person is going to go. But it happens, you know, and it happens either way.
So it's almost like the second chakra is the trunk. If you're thinking about the car analogy, we just stuff everything down into there. And let's just say there's a lot.
Emotional things.
Yeah, emotional things. There's a lot of women and men who have had horrible experiences with sexual molestation, abuse, all of that stuff. And a lot of times they don't know how, and they don't know that there is even a possibility to let that go.
Well, I had a unique situation with a client recently, and it's a young female. And most of the time, we're speaking of, you know, man, woman, but also male or female energy. And a man could be more female energy, a woman can be more male energy. And this is a more male energy woman. So when it comes to actual intercourse, most of the time we're talking about the woman being on the receiving end of being penetrated or invaded. But I had to point out to this woman, she was recently intimate with a guy that was a softer energy and he had some performance issues. And I said, look, this is not something I normally say to a woman, but you have to understand, guys like that feel like they're being consumed, okay? And she, it turned the lights on for her. because we don't usually talk about sex like that. It's usually the man is the aggressor, mm-hmm. but some men can't handle a more assertive woman. Mm-hmm. So they feel like they're being drawn in literally and figuratively, mm-hmm. like it's out of control. And issues of control are part of the second chakra. It's a power play
exactly.
that goes on. So it's, you know, most of the time we, and statistics tell us that women are on the short end of abusive situations. We know that. But if a guy has his own issues where the second chakra wasn't developed correctly, he will feel abused and attacked.
Right. Or so, if they haven't learned all of that, you know, a lot of times guys in particular, there's not like this manual and there's so much pressure and there's so much.
Is that MAN-UAL manual?
No, it's like we've both worked with many people over the years that in whatever way, shape or form have challenges with all that. And, you know, sometimes guys think that they want to learn through watching porn or whatever that thing is. And then you're taking out the intimacy part of it. And, you know, with our society and all the things that have been covert about it and all the things that have been literally not said by parents and taught by parents, it's like there's just this unfortunate relearning that many people have to do in society.
So let me address that, please, on how the chakras are developed. So
it's a chakra night.
But mysticism, look, this is really important because people don't think like this. The two highest forms of energy that humans have are spiritual and sexual, but they're in the same pipeline, which is the second chakra. So one doesn't really operate without the other, but people have to be responsible adults and know which energy is appropriate to apply in that circumstance. All right. Now we know that when sexual energy is repressed by oath of celibacy, that is like a volcano that has been blocked and the energy goes sideways, which we know in modern language as perversion. Mm-hmm. All right. You can't block the natural energy of the soul body. It's energy. It's going to go somewhere. It's infinite. It's ultimate power. And you don't have the ability to segment your energy consciously enough to say it's okay. Because the soul body says, that's not okay. Mm-hmm. Now, in a great relationship between couples, it can be sexual and spiritual energy at the same time. And when that's right, that's tantric, which is like the best. So that, but there's one more part to this, and it does involve our development. So the second chakra develops between age 3 to 5. Then the solar plexus, which is how you think, develops between 7 and 14. That's called latency. But when we get to age 14, from 14 to 21, we start to develop the heart chakra, which is the love center. Okay, so what's wrong with this picture? So we're learning intimacy and emotional development and attachments to people and things at age 3, but we're not really learning love until age 14. All right, and that's why there is a natural separation as we grow energetically, where sex is sex and love is love. We have to learn. It has to be learned behavior to have those come together. It's not a natural occurrence based on our energetic body. And so many times when I work on people, I'll see that separation, especially in two new clients last week, where there is a divide. And I do point that out. Sex is sex, love is love. We have to break that barrier so that they can come together and that person can be vulnerable, which is a comfort with being able to let their guard down in intimacy. Mm-hmm. It's complex.
It truly is.
It's like it's easy to sit here and explain it, but to do it and behave it and to be okay with it, that's a whole different story.
I think there's a part of it where it's just important to be okay with not only talking about sex, but, you know, literally understanding that for many people, it's something that needs to be on a level learned or relearned.
Right.
You know,
well, people are trainable. If a person If a person isn't comfortable in bed or isn't comfortable with intimacy, or they were never taught or they don't know. And we come from a generation where, you know, having your parents tell you about intimacy and all that, the birds and the bees, you know, right. You learn through friends, or hopefully there was a class that you took, or you learn through pornography. See, that's now the stories much more that I've... comfort with it. We talk about it more openly. And by the way, Audrey has been very good with our daughters in talking about intimate topics. She's excellent at it.
I was just about to say, the amount of stories that I have heard, and my own stories in particular over the years, on what is he saying?
Kirby wrote, "But I loved you in high school, Nick, but I didn't want sex." Thank you for sharing that, Kirby. I feel so much better now.
Kirby's like our humor tonight. Oh, thank you, God. Kirby.
We have to have Kirby on as a Zoom guest.
There we go. That Kirby, would be fun. And
we're
Kirby,
put your face on
it. You can talk all about his.
Oh my God.
You can talk all about his teenage years that we would like to know about. That would be fun.
There wasn't much, trust me.
So
late bloomer.
So I want to bring it back to the timeline again, and
sure,
back to me, because there was a couple of things that I wanted to share. So looking at my own timeline today, I was like taking some time to ponder it, because, you know, I don't do that very often. So I was looking back at my life and looking at these different things that have happened in my story. And one of the things was just very interesting, and it came up yesterday with my daughter. There's somebody that used to be in my life that isn't in my life anymore. And then I got to thinking about it, and there's a lot of people that aren't in my life that used to be. So I do have some people that have been around a long time. You know who you are, my Florida friends. You guys know me from way, way back, and we're still talk. In fact, Robin called me today. Happy birthday. And then there are all these people along the way. And one of the things that I have shared with many clients and in my groups, when we're going through this process of learning who we are and we're understanding who we want to be in life, not the program that we took on, not the stuff, but who we authentically want to be. And we go through that learning and understanding and that transformative thing. It's like we start out, like many of my clients, when they first come in, they're on the bottom, especially if it's somebody that I'm working with in rehab. I mean, they're like very much on the bottom. And then they'll come over and they'll be calmer. They'll start making more of their own intentional choices instead of having so many unconscious consequences. And they just start learning how to be in a different way. So they're no longer here. They've moved over to here, and they're starting to change their life. And the interesting part of it is who they chose in their life, like myself as the example, who I used to be and the people that I resonated with are no longer who I'm kind of resonating with. And not that they're wrong or bad or I'm wrong or bad. It's just simply we, in our lifetime, when you're doing a spiritual practice, when you're learning who you are and you're leveling up, as it were, you start wanting different things. You start making different choices. And it's been interesting over the years, myself included, to see how many times I've gone through periods where it's like, wow, you know, I don't feel that person anymore. I don't feel I'm not resonating over in my old life anymore, but I haven't created a strong enough bunch of new people in my life. So there were many times where it was a little on the lonely side. And it's important to really get that that's okay to be and to keep leveling up and to keep bringing new people into your life that match who you are. And so that's one aspect of being with people. So it's not that the people that I'm not with anymore or don't see as much that I have anything against them or, you know, there's nothing there. I still love them. I just don't have the same kind of interest or whatever the thing is. But the other part of it is, and this is, I think, super important. when you're in that timeline thing, and the most important part of the timeline, and I'll show you this one that I had made with my client again. I don't even know if we can see it. Can you see us?
There we go.
So when you're looking at it, the most important part is right here, this choice point right now. It's always the most important time in a timeline is this moment right here and right now, because this is where we get to choose, and we get to choose consciously. We get to choose with intention. So there's a part of it where I'm here now, who I used to be really doesn't matter so much, but for a lot of people it does. And here's where it gets very interesting, because in my own life, who I am is no longer who I was back here. So I've had many clients who they're here in my office now, but they're still owning the stuff of the past. They're still owning that they did this back here. They were this person who made bad choices. I made a lot of bad choices, to be clear. I did things that I would never do in this moment now. So in the timeline, in my own choice point, there's this part of it where I had to continually let go of my own judgment around me and my own judgment around, you know, the effect that I had on other people, and literally continue to be in that process of being in my own choice point. And then comes the part, the next level of it, where there's people who have been in my life all this time who literally will keep their attention on who I was back here and not even understand or know who I am now. And I have to be okay with that. And I have to keep being okay with all of these things. And so in this 50, now 8 years of my life, there's a big part of it where there has been this just learning how to be me and understanding who me is and not being at the effect of who I was back here, the choices that I made, the people, the stuff, all of that. It's this continual being in this moment and having that intention set on what I'm going to do in this next year of my life. Does all that make sense? Does that make sense?
Of course.
So with that being said, I've got all these new intentions now and all this ability to own myself in a whole new way. So it's, I was talking with my girlfriend on the phone yesterday and I was finding myself cussing up a storm. And I was like, oh, I don't think I'm needing to do that anymore. When I used to work at the rehab or any of those rehabs, you got to make yourself a little kind of dirty. You know, I was a little too shiny. And so I would cuss, you know, because then they'd be like, wow, she cusses and she's like us. And it's like it made things on a level better. But I found myself getting into a habit. So being in my choice point today, especially a birthday, I'm looking at all the aspects of my life and it's like what works and what's no longer working. So that's one of the things that I'm going to be making an adjustment to. So there's no judgment on it. It's just an adjustment. Were you just going to say something?
Well, yes, when you were talking about rehab, and this may be a topic for another show. So you and I both have worked in rehabs, mm-hmm. all right? And we are considered normies in that community because we're not sober. You know, we live normal lives. But the question is...
To you.
Oh my goodness.
Speaking of... Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you.
Oh my gosh. Amazing. All right, I'll make a big wish.
Oh.
All right. It's time. We're going to take off the top layer of icing, I guess.
And this, go ahead. There we
ta-da!
Go.
Candles. Thank you.
Thank you. Oh, the we'll fire alarm's going to go front. Off. All those candles.
No. Anyway, the timer.
Thank you. That is so nice. And that's a King Hawaiian cake. Those things. Yeah. Stephanie Sakamoto. Yep. Thank you so much.
Yeah, the paradise.
That's
cake.
Like eating air, like sweet, yummy, delicious air cake. It's so good. Happy birthday to me. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. The guests stay and have cake after the show, please.
Yeah. Please,
that's part of what you're here. Look, in the time we have remaining, and this is a question for you, and going back to, you know, that in working with, you know, clients that have addictions, drugs, alcohol, so on and so forth. But why is it so difficult to work with someone that has a sex addiction? Why is that so hard to break? Because I really need help.
I want to address something.
You guys are alive.
I want to say something about addictions in general. And I think this is something that's super important. And it goes back again to the 9 to 15 age, and then from the 15 to 21 year age and up to 25. And I say this to, especially I have a young women's group that I'm working with right now. And this is super important for everybody to understand. Addictions, a lot of it is learned behavior. Definitely sometimes if we're that kind of personality, we can take a drink and our body does something and we are, you know, unfortunately, it is a super big struggle. But for a lot of people, they go into addictions because they're in these periods of life that are uncomfortable. And they're hard, and they don't learn how to be in their emotions. So many people, it's like, I'm going to go and drink, because if I drink, I can go to a party, and I don't have to be anxious. I don't have to be angry. I can just go, and I can let that stuff go, because the alcohol takes it away. Or they do whatever to mask the feelings that they don't know how to manage. So one of the reasons why it's important what we're doing is we teach people how to be with their emotions in a way that is constructive. But back to that period of time when kids are growing up and they're learning that alcohol or drugs feel better. It's not that they really feel better. It just, they're not feeling the pain at the moment. Then the pain comes right back. So it's an illusion. But the important part of it is, when we're developing our brains, and I'm going to speak for myself as an example. When I was developing my brain, I started drinking probably around 15, and I started smoking pot. And I grew up doing those things. And that was the prefrontal cortex of my brain growing. So in the growing of that part of my brain, that was normal. That was okay. That was just who I was and what I did. I used an analogy for how the brain develops. This prefrontal cortex for all of us is growing from up until about 26. And you're developing that strong habit of your life. So if you think about it like this, usually it's the car analogy or the boat. This is a big ass choo-choo train. I know I said I wasn't going to cuss. It's a big choo-choo train. And the prefrontal cortex is like the locomotive. It's the thing that's choosing the track. It's the thing that's got all the power. It's carrying all the rest of the parts of your brain behind it. So it is the leader. It's figuring out where you're going to go. So when we're smoking pot, we're drinking, and we're altering our brain, and we're creating that as normal, your brain has that locked and loaded. So it makes it super hard when we then go to want to change that. It's like, I don't know, you don't understand. My brain works better like this, or it's okay. Or we go into whatever subconscious, unconscious reasoning that makes it work. So then when you're also talking about sex, when kids grow up with whatever idea around sex, like as an example, a sex addiction can look a whole bunch of different ways. Like men can literally grow up thinking, if I have an orgasm, it reduces my anxiety. So then they start thinking, well, my wife, and I've had many men that I've worked with who says, well, this, I'm not going to go into details, but I've literally had them say, well, she's my wife. That's what she's supposed to do. So on a level, he's saying she's supposed to help me reduce the anxiety or the whatever the thing is. And I mean, this is very, very common. Or another, you know, there's just like all these different ideas around sex that we don't have that definition for. We don't have that, you know, understanding of what it is. And we develop that idea of what it should be. And then that becomes something I have to have. And if I don't have it, then there's a problem. So it turns, instead of being this mutual loving, giving, sharing, being tantric with each other, whatever the thing is, to something that is needed or demanded. And that's when it turns into a bit more of an addiction, right?
Right.
Do you want to add to that?
No, I don't.
Are we ending the show on that?
We gotta go. To be continued. This is an excellent topic. And there's a lot of curiosities. And the point is that we do have techniques. Audrey and I are here to help you work through things and whatever it is. That's why we're here. It sounds like a funny topic to talk about, but when you get into it, it's not.
Well, think about it this way. Sex is like, I think Ronan doesn't mind if we have an extra minute. Sex is one of those things that should be one of the most beautiful parts of life. And because of so many things that have gone on generationally, it's turned into a bit of a struggle for a lot of people. And so there's nothing wrong in it. There's nothing bad in it. But at this moment, for all of us, again, we're all in a choice point. So if there is anything in your life that has to do with love that's not serving you, you know, there is an ability to step back and say, well, it doesn't have to be for the rest of my life that this is a challenge. What is the thing and how are you going to choose to work through it? You don't have to wait for your birthday, you know, so be in the moment and figure out what are the things that I really would like. What do you want love to look like? What do you want intimacy to look like? And then make that happen.
We can talk about that next week on my birthday.
Hey, yeah. Next week is his birthday.
Anyway, we do have to go. We've run over. This has been Mainstream Metaphysics, Audrey's birthday show. I'm Nick Newmont. Tune in next week. And we are doing the show. We don't have a guest, but we'd love our studio audience to return. Tell your friends. And if you're watching on Facebook or on LA Talk Radio, please share this with your friends.
Thank you.
We are here to help. Have a good night, everyone. See you next week.
You're listening to Mainstream Metaphysics with Nick and Audrey Newmont, only on LA Talk Radio.